Good morning, everyone. Thank you for being so prompt. We'll see if we can get the rest of the people to come in. You can help me sing a song. When I first joined the Paul Witter Consort, I got to sing this song. I didn't write it. A great Brazilian composer, Ivan Lins, wrote this melody. And we put English words to it. And I got to sing it. So there's a chorus. Be ready. Voices are calling round the earth. Music is rising in the sea. The spirit of morning fills the air, guiding my journey home. Here is the path beyond the forest. Here is the song I always knew. I remember it just around the bend. In the village, the music never ends. In a circle of friends, in a circle of sound, all our voices will blend when we touch common ground. Help with that chorus. We can do it in two languages like this. In a circle of friends. This means friends when you hook your fingers together. In a circle, this means circle of sound. All our voices will blend when we touch common ground. Somewhere is the melody we need. There is a certain harmony. Even a rhythm in the trees, in the song that we've always known. As every road comes to its end, so every path must cross again. Now I'm returning to my heart, back to the song that is our own. In a circle of friends, in a circle of sounds, all our voices will blend when we touch common ground.
Sound, all our voices will blend
common ground. Let's do that again. Let's do it as a round. In a circle, all our voices, when we touch common ground. I know we all have to roll our eyes and whisper to each other after someone makes us sing around together.
Here we are touching common ground, opening our hearts and minds to be touched, to touch one another, and what might emerge from that. We cannot guess. We cannot know. I invite you to take a moment to greet and perhaps even to touch one another, especially anyone around you who you do not know. Everyone is welcome here, whatever their spiritual path, whatever their gender, race, sexuality, gender identity, age, size, ability, or disability. Whoever you are, wherever you have come from, you are welcome here. A special welcome to any newcomers this morning. Please sign the guest register in the narthex and join us after the service for coffee in the Alsop room, which is down the hall to the left as you leave the sanctuary. And if you have a joy or sorrow, please fill out the form in the narthex and put it in the basket or get it to Dick Beeman. We are lucky to have a special guest this morning, in case you haven't noticed. Jim Scott, UU musician extraordinaire, whose concert some of us enjoyed last night. Who was here last night? So some of us know some of the songs already. Yay!
We rehearsed.
Jim has been around UU music for a long time, has written some hymns that are in our hymnal, played with the Paul Winter Consort, helped to start the Green Sanctuary Movement, so lots of good things on his resume. And this morning, we gather with emergence on our mind, as that is our monthly theme. And I've been thinking of emergence as yesterday I saw the first tulips I had seen this year. And I've seen forsythia and redbud. And I'll bet you've seen things emerging. Now, these early spring plants may be challenged by cold and snow, but they are conditioned to be early emergers, and they will endure. We learn so much from them and from the earth in which they grow. The words of Jennifer McLaughlin, as the first hint of green begins to peek through the barren ground, as that little sprig grows into a healthy stem, as that stem grows into a stalk and forms a bud, as that bud slowly opens with each new day to form a yellow daffodil, let us be like that first hint of green, renewed by the warmth of the sun's rays and ready to emerge with a new energy, ready to face the day. And Jim has a chalice lighting for us as I invite Jake to come forward and light the chalice.
fire and start handle the sacred matches, and I'll talk. We light a chalice with a flame at the commencement of our spiritual gatherings, and sometimes we even light a chalice for business meetings and such at camps and conference centers. Wherever you're going to find Unitarian Universalists, you'll probably find a chalice or several. I know people who travel with chalices. I haven't quite ascended to that myself. But it's a symbol of our free faith, our free search for faith, we like to say. Our free lack of faith, as some have put it. And it's symbolic of a great many things. On another Sunday, I can promise you, it'll have an entirely different connotation. But today, it means to me that the earth is a vessel sailing on with a fire in its heart. The inside of the earth, someone told me, I believe it was on NPR, is virtually as hot as the sun. Now, if it's that hot on the inside, where are the flames on the outside? Well, we must be them. We are on this cooling planet, that energy force of earth burning, oxidizing, green and blue and white, when you see us from out in space, down here on the ground, fashioning from the earth a whole spectrum of color, providing this mysterious and mystical balance of peace and health and justice that we might call spirit. And I like this word spirit, as you'll see. I invite you to find hymn number 347 in this great hymn book of ours, or her book, however we do it here. And yeah, some people think I'm too big to be funny, but thank you for laughing. And they made me older than I am, but most of the notes are right. I like to start halfway through and sing you the latter part of the song, that's the refrain, sort of the song, and model that precipitous drop in the melody that happens in there. So that'll just be me and the people who weren't paying attention. And then we'll all start at the beginning. May we stand for this as willing and able. Gather in peace. Gather in thanks. I was kidding, you can sing too. Gather in sin.
Gather to celebrate one.
in peace, gather in, gather in thanks, gather in sympathy. Sympathy now and then, gather in hope. Gathered once again in that dangerous bastion, the church that threatens family values, the church that wants to undermine the authority of the Father, the church that has half forgotten the Creator in its pagan worshiping of the creation, the church that those right-wing radio ministries have warned us about. This church of bleeding heart liberalism, some thinly veiled front for leftist politics, of homosexual propaganda. I like it here. The church that tells you you won't be going to hell no matter what you do in this life. And the church that often leaves the first few pews open for the diversity we're sure is going to show up. We're open to it. The church of practicing witches, whose very assertion they don't believe in any devil, confirms they must be accomplishing some of his work. And the church that sings carefully, not sure if there are any words we can totally subscribe to and not be questioning ourselves tomorrow or in the next worship committee meeting. The church that is not sure if there is, in fact, anything that we can celebrate with that passion and abandon those other churches hold for Jesus, the Savior, Son of God, the Father. Although something lurks in us, we might be missing out on some of their fun. It is that search for ecstasy, enlightenment, and other things, including free coffee, which is often the only thing whose origins we don't question, that brings us together. This is my church, and I'm a zealot. This is the church that says to everyone, you're not only welcome, but we need you and your creative input in our continuing creative and evolving culture. Diversity is a strength, a survival mechanism we believe in. We face the challenge of weighing new and ancient wisdom in our search for guidance in this life, as well as the continuing creation of our own mythology. It's not an easy job. And we come together in meetings like this to offer each other ourselves for sustenance. So as a great minister friend used to say about this point, he'd say, well, that's about all I had to say. But I'm not going to stop now. And yay, now something's going to happen. I just want to say this. I hope it doesn't sound defensive. That I've read that funny thing. Well, I hope it starts out funny and ends up poignant. About what you use are for a while, and people ask me, can we reprint it in our newsletter or things like that. I'm glad that we can make fun of ourselves that way. But a woman wrote to me just recently, and this is the third time I'd say someone has objected, and I would like to say I don't think they heard what I said exactly right. She wrote a polite email. She said, I was there with my Presbyterian relatives, and they laughed, but I thought they could have been offended, and it's important. I think it's important for us to remember that we shouldn't make fun of other people's religions. Well, I didn't think I made fun of anybody else's religions. I did say those right-wing radio ministries in the beginning. That might have sounded derogatory. Maybe it was just my delivery. But I was trying to say, we look at all these other churches here in our most segregated hour, said Martin Luther King. And he was quoting Malcolm X. And
there's churches that appear to be having a great time. They're clapping their hands and getting excited and celebrating Jesus, my personal Savior, washed in the blood, born again, all of those wonderful things. And we wonder, what do we have to get as excited about as Unitarian Universalists? What do we have to be as excited about? Well, we have our seven principles. Now, what's so funny about that? Because aren't there exciting things to be excited about? Yay! I am, and if I don't talk too long right now, I might be able to get that in. I'm a large white male. What can I say? It's very therapeutic to drive a long way and get people to pay attention to you. So here I am. I write these songs and I have words left over. I'm sorry. I won't apologize. So I joked about that you won't be going to hell no matter what you do in this life. Now, I started at the Universalist Church of Norwell, Massachusetts, and I remember my dad telling me when I was only 6 or 7, I might have been 5, when we left that tall, narrow church with the steeple, I guess hell had been brought up in the service, and my dad, who is taller than I am now, with his deep voice, his math teacher voice, said, well, we Universalists don't believe that a loving God would sentence us to an eternity of damnation and hellfire. That was a great thing to find out. That was a liberating thing to find out, and it's the gift we give to our young people to question that bombardment of common knowledge that's out there, that's in movies and in everything, even sneaks into public school and all that, that we need to beware of in this free country based on separation of church and state, for now anyway, and freedom of religion. We meet with relative abandon to celebrate these, I was going to say radical, revolutionary ideas. And we hope there's things that anybody could subscribe to, the dignity and worth of every person, free search for faith, encouragement of each other on our spiritual journeys. We say we don't have to agree to be together, and compassion in human relations, democracy. Now, that's a little antithetical to some religions right there. We don't have a big book up here with all the answers. We make it up as we go along, as I joked about, with all the highest intent and responsibility we can put to it. We are making this liturgy, making this philosophy, this theology that keeps evolving. The 2,000-year-old stories are good, but there are 3 times as many people on the earth as when I was born after World War II. So the stories might be different. There may be different stories to lead us along now. And I'm the guy who needs to write different songs to carry this along. Also, we could just remember Unitarians. I get tired of the people who say, that Unitarian thing, we used to be able to come to church on Sunday and be telling each other what Garrison Keillor said about Unitarians the night before. I'm sorry that's gone nowadays. But we love to joke about ourselves, I think. But Unitarians, we could just remember, we lost the vote. See, not we, but our ancestors back there in 300-something A.D., the Council of Nicaea, the great expanding Holy Roman Empire at that time was mostly Unitarian. And then they had this vote, and they voted for that thing, the Father, Son, Holy Ghost, the Trinity, and they won. And we lost. And from then on, we were the heretics. We were through the Dark Ages. This is forced conversions and wars and all of that, and using religion as we always do for the taking over of property and taking over of people and so on. So it's only not that long ago, a few hundred years ago, that a visionary king in Romania says, let's stop killing each other over our religious differences, and we get this freedom of religion movement that has brought about this Unitarian idea, or brought it back. And of course, there's the Reformation, and there's a lot of wars, and you know, there's always wars involved. But here we are, the folks who say we're people of faith too, and we're real good at this interfaith thing. We can go to other people of faith and say, "Hey, we're just people of faith too," and you know, we may not agree about this and that, but still, we can agree we're in this small town and we're in on this small earth, and we got work to do together. So I get all my inspiration from you as I come visit churches. I have been to, I didn't count until I realized other people were counting. I've been to over 700 UU churches, I think more than anybody. So there's my claim to fame. Thanks for listening to that, and we'll go on with the service. What are these rows of chairs doing here anyway? Yeah, I would like to invite kids to come up. Even when I don't see a lot of people under 21 in front of me, I love to do a song for kids in a program. Hi, come on up. And you can bring your big people with you if you want. Yeah, and so I would love to have any brave other people come up and fill this. It doesn't look good on the video. You know, the TV broadcast won't look very good with all these empty seats. Thank you very much, radical developers. Okay, I'm going to try to turn around kind of half sideways, but still keep this microphone going. Hi, everybody. Second grade?
Hello.
Gonna be in second grade next year, maybe? Used to be in second grade. It was a good... I wrote this song with a bunch of second graders. And they're pretty smart in second grade, I found out. They told me all about the rainforest. We made a song together about the rainforest, but it kind of shows me about how all things go together. They knew about the four levels of the rainforest, which was a new thing. I'd never heard that before, but I thought it should go in the song. So the four levels are in there. They go by fast. But then we see how they all go together. On the ground level, turtles and leopards and snakes live in the shelter the understory makes. The ground is so soft and the air is so clear, with 300 inches of rain every year. Oh, let the rain feed the thirsty ground. Sing me the song of life you sing, such a beautiful sound. Does that sound like a participatory refrain to you? You can do it. Oh, let the rain feed the thirsty ground. Sing me the song of life. Sing me the song of life you sing, such a beautiful sound. I wonder, I'll bet kids you've maybe studied about the rainforest. It's a thing we love to get into in schools these days. But a rainforest is a forest that is so many trees that are like soda straws. They're sucking water out of the ground. And the trees have this way of then sending the water, evaporating the water up into the sky and making clouds. And then, of course, it rains from the clouds again, and forests make rain. That's what a rain forest is. But, you know, I lived in Eugene, Oregon for a long time, and that kind of is the rainforest. And about October, certainly by November, it starts to rain. And it doesn't rain all the time, but it just kind of rains and rains. It doesn't snow much at all, but rains and rains and rains until April, May, sometimes even till June it's raining. And then it doesn't rain very much for a few months. But we can get pretty tired of that, that rain thing. But who can tell us something that's good about the rain? What's good about the rain? Anything? It doesn't have to be serious. What's a good thing about the rain? Yeah, it feeds the plants. What's another thing? Yeah, it will keep the dust down, keep the dirt from, keeps the dirt fertile and other stuff. Any other good stuff? Puddles, anything else? Anything good? What's a good thing about the rain? Can resort to big people too. And what's the good thing about the rain? It tastes good. Yeah, yeah. Of course, there's oxygen in water. Yeah, that's a good thing too. It sounds beautiful. Yeah. I drove yesterday from Iowa. I drove through a torrential rain. Boy, the sound of that in a car when you're going a mile a minute is maybe not what you were speaking of. Well, so what I like to say is we're mostly made of rain. We're mostly made of water, and the water that is us now was probably rain sometime, because this water's been around for millions of years here on Earth. Somebody told me that people, that humans, are just one of the ways that water, excuse me, just one of the ways that water evolved to move itself around the planet. So there we are. Let's see the second verse. Down in the ground, the worms and the ants nurture the roots of the flowering plants, as my friend said. And up in the canopy, life is a breeze. Orangutans swing from the limbs of the trees. Oh, let the rain feed the thirsty ground. Sing me the song of life, sing me the song of life. You sing such a beautiful sound. Where the toucans fly, they're birds. Emergent treetops reach into the sky. There's more kinds of plants than anyone knows. Look out, there's a sloth hanging by her three toes. Oh, let the rain feed the thirsty ground. Sing me the song of life, you sing such a beautiful sound. Now while some of us sing that part, we need some others of us to sing another part. That goes, rain come down, rain come down. If you got a higher voice, rain come down. That's all there is to it, rain come down. Oh, let the rain come, feed the thirsty ground. About this point, rain come down. I like to put in the pop quiz. What were those four levels of the rainforest? Any kids know one of them? You know one? Don't give them all away. What's one? The ground? Yeah, that's a good one. What's the one? Yeah, the tree. We call it the canopy, the umbrella of all the trees. And in the song, I call it that. You know, can you give us another one? You know, I would have made that. I would have done that myself. I would have made the underground a level if it were up to me. Unfortunately, it wasn't. So, whoever made up this four levels, the under the canopy is called the understory. And apparently the ground level just suffices for underground. I don't know. And four levels. Yeah, there's something that we have a name for it. The tallest, biggest old trees stick up sometimes way above the canopy. And it's called the emergent level. Now, those are names that apparently are in a book, but my friends in Columbia, Missouri yelled out from the back of the concert, "We were just in Costa Rica. We asked them, do you know the four levels of the rainforest?" And they said, "What?" So, so it's the way we learn things. Way I remember it. There's the understory, the understory. If you got a low voice, be the understory. Goes up and down, understory. And the ground level, you can be the ground level. The understory, or the ground level. The ground level. Canopy, ground level, canopy, find your level, canopy, the under, the canopy, the emergent, emergent, oh, there's the ground level, and the under story, and the emergent. Song of life you sing, such a beautiful sound. Oh, let the rain come down. Rain come down. Rain come down. Rain come down. What that shows me is there's all this stuff that's going on all around us, up in the air, down in the ground, down in the water. There are all these things that are working together that help keep us going. One word for that might be harmony. I like that because I'm a musician. The harmony of nature, we say. But another word for it just might be peace. And I hope kids will find a bit of that peace in your life today. So kids are going to go off and do something more interesting now, I believe. And or you're welcome to stay, too. Well-behaved, mature kids are welcome to stay for the whole service. And we hope we'll make it interesting. And we'll sing you out, and someone can help us start this song.
Offering a sign and symbol of our communal support of this congregation. There are many other ways we contribute through words and presence and action. This is the time when we consider how financial commitment to the congregation plays out. We invite the generosity of your heart, and Dick will collect joys and concerns.
Thank you.
mystery. I feel its harmony in ebb and crest. Peace is a work of art that moves the open heart. Peace is a place to start and final rest. Harmony of harmony, I hear you sing to me. Let it wash over me, let it begin. Harmony of harmony, unfolding melody, I am your instrument. Let peace begin with me. Peace is a beacon bright that brings us inner sight, a radiating light conquering fear. Peace is the wild bird's call, the painted leaves in fall. Peace is the health of all, I feel it here. Harmony of harmony, I hear you sing. Let it wash over me, let it begin. Harmony of harmony, unfolding melody, I am your instrument. Let peace begin with me. Peace is a field of grain, 'neath sun and gentle rain. In nature's glad refrain of love begun, all beings' songs are sung as bells together rung. Peace speaks in every tongue, all songs are one. Harmony of harmony, I hear you sing to me. Let it wash over me, let it begin. Harmony of harmony, unfolding melody, I am your instrument. Let peace begin with me.
Our fellowship doesn't celebrate a lot of sacraments, the making holy of common things, because we consider the common works of our lives to already be holy. By sharing the common events of our lives, we do acknowledge something special in them, something special that binds us more closely together. And today, we hold in our hearts Sabrina, who had to put her dog Bear down. She had him 13 years, and she's also rescued another dog named Molly, who is a good dog. And we have many welcomes to make, not only Molly. Belle and Rob and Sam are welcoming their daughter and sister, I guess, Claire, visiting from Boston. And Dick and Sylvia Beeman are welcoming their daughters Irene and Chloe, visiting this week, and grandson Sofyan. And a big welcome. Kim Ewing has a big welcome to the world to Atlee Ace Davis, who was born April the 3rd, 2018. So she is a proud and blessed grandma. And finally, I think this may be a stealth announcement. It's always a joy when the annual Enid Stover Poetry Recital takes place this afternoon at 1:30 at the library. And so we hold in our hearts all of these joys and concerns and those that remain unspoken.
Here's a little song for all that we printed the words in your order of service. With every story told, our friendship becomes art. Each passage of life is a gateway to the heart. We are one in joy and sorrow, and the music of our learning is danced in love and harmony with each day of Earth's turning. That was the rehearsal. Let's do it again. With every story told, our friendship becomes art. Each passage of life is a gateway to the heart. We are one in joy and sorrow, and the music of our learning is danced in love and harmony with each day of Earth's turning.
And I offer a poem, The Crocuses, by Frances Ellen Watkins Harper, who was a African-American, free African-American in slavery times, but was a Unitarian. So her words. They heard the south wind sighing a murmur of the rain. They knew the earth was longing to see them again, while the snowdrops still were sleeping beneath the silent sod. They felt their new life pulsing within the dark, cold clod. Not a daffodil nor daisy had dared to raise its head. Not a fair-haired dandelion peeped timid from its bed. Though a tremor of the winter did shivering through them run, yet they lifted up their foreheads to greet the vernal sun. And the sunbeams gave them welcome, as did the morning air, and scattered o'er them simple robes, rich tints of beauty rare. Soon a host of lovely flowers from vales and woodland burst, but in that fair procession the crocuses were first. First to weave for earth a chaplet to crown her dear old head and beautify the pathway where winter still did tread. And their loved and white-haired mother smiled sweetly neath the trough when she knew her faithful children were loving her so much.
I am one. silence. I am waiting for the dawn. I am often found in reverence, though from many sources drawn. It is not mine to fight for justice, for it will not be won this day. I am peace, and I am waiting for the lost to find their way. You'll not find me set in judgment of the vain or of the weak, but I rise to meet the weary with the solace that they seek. Still I have not fed the hungry, nor strewn wealth among the poor. I am peace and bring but mystery and the patience to endure. I cannot save the suffering from their anger and their pain. Only open doors of insight, so the healing comes again. To the proud I am elusive, to the humble I am near. May the broken rise and look beyond the trappings of their fears. I am found among the seasons, autumn's death and spring's rebirth, as relentless their momentum as the turning of the earth. All are welcome in my presence, for only love can conquer hate. I am peace, and for the harvest I have planted and will wait.
I began to play on Sunday mornings with regularity. Actually, 83, I guess, but 84. I looked at a calendar I had from 84, 85, and discovered in the year 85, all 52 Sundays of the year, I was in a UU church somewhere. And many years ever since, it's been like that. Now I'm a single dad of a teenage daughter, and I am not wandering around on the road as much as you might think. I confine it mostly to weekends, and so on a weekend like this, I disappear on Friday, and often I'm back on Sunday night. Tonight I'm playing in Topeka. I'll be home on Monday before my daughter gets... Oh, no, it's school vacation next week. Oh, my gosh, in Massachusetts. So that's the way I live. I have refound my home in the Unitarian Universalist denomination, and it's a bit of a default since I, you know, became a dad that I've done a lot of my traveling and touring and playing for peace groups or environmental groups or even things like that is connected somehow to UU-ism. And people say, well, do you only play in churches? No, I'll play for anybody that wants to hear me. But it's become my thing. And being able to call up a church and say, well, you know, I got songs in the hymn book has been a good way to go. Just recently I called. And
So I've been to more than half of the U.S. churches, or I think there's 1,200 or something. I've been to 700, so, and been to a few in England and Scotland and Ireland, Australia as well. So I collect UU churches, and I've done my sociological study on how we are. Love, after all, is one of our principles. Compassion and love and all that, and agape kind of love. You know, I wonder if, you know, somewhere in there with our whole lives education, if we might get an eighth or ninth or tenth principle that has more to do with love. But sex, love, springtime, all of that. Ooh, what happens in the spring? I've written songs about this, and it entertains me. I used to think that I wrote songs, several songs about the earth and things. Thinking I'm writing songs about science and topics that interest me. And my running joke is I'm not big on the "I love you, baby. I need you, baby. I'm gonna do something self-destructive unless you come back" songs. I don't have a lot of those, but. This is what has made my life interesting, to write songs about the earth and peace on earth and community and justice and all of that and all those good granola subjects, you know. So I get work from this. Somewhere in those tofu and macrame-filled boardrooms, somebody says, "Get that guy who sings a song about the earth," and I get a gig from that. So this is how I work. But I have evolved a philosophy from all of this, and I'd like to just share that with you, because I'm an eternal optimist. I don't need to come to you and tell you what trouble we're in, because we are in trouble. There were folks saying before this last election, I know you noticed that election that happened a year and a half ago. That's all I'm going to say about that. But there were folks predicting that if a certain person got elected, the world might not survive. And we are up against that now. We have people in this government, not just the president now, but in our government, that are remarkably ignorant. You know, they're stupid people, and they invest a lot in this. It costs a lot of money to make the United States as ignorant as it is apparently now compared to all the rest of the world that knows climate change, climate disruption is a real thing. If you're on an island in the Pacific, you know it's a real thing. If you're down in the valley where there's no glacier on top of the mountain anymore and no water is coming anymore, you know it's a real thing. If that huge lake or even some seas are now deserts, you know this is a real thing. I heard a prediction the other day that said the Middle East will be uninhabitable in 20 years. It'll be almost like space station kind of living. Already, they lead the world in desalinization of water and of trying to crank up the machinery somehow to fight against this thing. But we've got to stop doing what we're doing in order to change the way the world works. Did you know folks counted the number of trees on Earth? This was a big job, too. There's something like 5 trillion. I don't know the exact number. I really don't. But apparently we need another trillion or two. That doesn't sound so hard, really. That's not high tech, exactly. It just takes a will to do that. North America doesn't create enough oxygen. The continent doesn't create enough oxygen for the people consuming it and toxifying it the way we are. It's a good thing we got oceans on either side, and we got the great arboreal forest in the north that unfortunately is under great duress, and the rainforests in South America and Central America, which do a little bit for us as well. We can't go on this way. My joke, I do what sometimes they call it lectures or lecture recitals at a college, and I'll come in and my opening joke is, we cannot go on meeting like this. It's a joke, but it's not. We can't go on meeting as though the elephant in the room is not recognized, that we don't have long to go if we keep doing what we're doing. Most of us, I think, hope we will not keep doing what we're doing. And we're trying to figure out how to not do what we do, but it's really difficult. It's really difficult to do by yourself. That's what's good about coming together and celebrating what's beautiful and amazing and fragile and saying we need to celebrate this and give worth to it. Our worship needs to include the earth. And I know there are religions that count themselves as liberal and progressive that say we are stewards of God's creation. The scientists that may or may not subscribe to all of that, though, tell us it is now a race between this climate disruption, the cataclysmic events that are happening much more than they used to, and the disappearing divergence of species. Of course, they're totally connected, but what will we do without bees, without bats? I just read there are a quarter of the insects in North America that there were only, I'm not sure what the amount of years, 25 to 40 years ago, there are a quarter of the insects. Great, we got less mosquitoes in some places. This is not a good thing. Bats need those mosquitoes. On and on, frogs. And these are not just the canary in the coal mine. These are links in the absolute necessary chain in the web of life that we cannot do without. So I was saying I didn't need to tell you what trouble we're in. There is a group because I'm usually preaching to the convicted. I know you all know this already. I just think it's important for us to get up and remind each other about it. I tend to like to celebrate how it all goes together and how it works and stay on the positive side, though I have my protest songs. Pro actually means for, you know. It's not as negative as it might sound. I don't know of any protesters that weren't offering an alternative. And I happened to see Fox News in an airport, and a woman, she's blonde, and don't turn it on. She said, "Those protesters, and they're just so negative. They're not for anything. They're just against everything." What a great way to describe us! You know, we are being described by the opposition as totally negative people, not for anything. You know. As I was saying, people even like to say about Unitarians, "Oh, that's the place you don't really believe in anything, right?" No, that's not it. We don't subscribe to that Trinity. We think Jesus was a pretty good guy. He taught some good things, all of that. But those seven principles that I was talking about guide us. Our six sources of all different spirituality lift us up and keep us going. Here's what keeps me going in the midst of all of that. I met with a group in the UK 2 years ago. Wait a minute, I'm going to say this first. That their premise, or their line, their opening statement, not that they've given up at all, is it's too late. That's what they say. It's too late. It is too late. The stuff you had when you were a kid, we don't have that anymore. The stuff we had last year, some of it is not going to be here this year. It's too late. How much? So their premise, that's kind of a joke again, because these are real, they're also real pagan tree worshiping, you know, outdoor gathering folks as well. They say, how much later than too late are you going to wait before you try to save what's left? You know, well, I got a growing IRA and I live behind a walls in a gated excuse me, if you live in one, I don't mean to say anything about that. Do we have any gated communities in Manhattan, Kansas? Okay. I'm safe. I'm going to interrupt my flow again to just say, mention this. I went to Nicaragua a long time ago, back in 1984, with Holly Neer. We traveled around, and we saw this relatively young revolution at that time that had thrown out the dictator Somoza. And you could still see the mansions and the behind walls and barbed wire and, you know, gun turrets and guard towers where people guarded the rich of Nicaragua. 15% of the country had everything, really owned everything, had all the rights. 85% of the country was almost all illiterate or, you know, functionally illiterate, had no rights to vote, no health care, no nothing, and were just supposed to be the servants, the slaves on the plantation, essentially. Now, that was a United States project, those places, you know, the banana republics, to make them the way they were. But the Somoza family ruled that place for a long time. So now, 5 years later, that was revolution in 79. In 84, people were saying, I'll never go there. People saying, I'll never go to the beach, because that's where the mafia, the organized crime, that's where the wicked people were, and people say, I can't bear to go there. That's where the assassinations were. That's where the so on and so on. The healing that has to go on for a country like that, you know, to break down those walls is staggering. And we see wars going on in other parts of the world similarly. We see great anger and great separation rising up in this country, too. And this is a difficult job. The only thing we can do is engage with love with those people that feel so differently than we do. And you have to listen. You can try to tell your point of view, but the way you negotiate, the way you have a discourse is by listening. Even when you know they're wrong, the practice of nonviolence, of engaging with this opposition, because so much money has been spent on the ignorance of the people of this country. And while 80% of one political party that runs this country still disavows that we're going down in climate change, in climate disruption, and so on. I don't know what's wrong with them exactly, but I believe underneath there must be a great pain going on. And we need to get them out of positions of power, for one thing, but we also need to engage in the people that are swept up with that. That's a difficult job. It could be dangerous. I don't mean to discourage you, but that's our job and our children's children's job. So what keeps me going in the face of all this? I just wrote rewrote a friend's anti-gun song and put it on my website. So I get these trolls saying, you government cheese-eating parasite, I haven't gotten death threats or anything, but I know people that have. This is a dangerous thing. I'm going to digress one more time, and I know time is getting out, so I'm going to try to finish, get to my point. I was in the Army a long time ago. I learned to take apart an M16. They timed us. I got a marksman badge. I didn't go to Vietnam and fight. I played in the Army band in Washington, D.C., and I came here in the Army Jazz Ambassadors Band in 1970. That's the first time I came to Manhattan, Kansas. And I remember we played a concert at the university, and then we went out downtown. And that night when the bars closed, all the cowboys, I guess, were out on the street. This was my introduction to Manhattan, Kansas. You may not recognize it now. But all these guys got out on the street. entirely male, as I could see, and had fistfights out in the main street that seemed to be refereed, and that was the entertainment when the bars closed. I don't know if you still do that, but. I hope humanity is evolving toward peace, is my thought. pardon me for raising that about Manhattan, Kansas. But here's what keeps me going. We wrote a big piece with the Paul Winter Consort when I was in the Paul Winter Consort. We wrote a big piece. We were commissioned by the Cathedral of St. John in New York by this visionary dean of the cathedral, James Morton, who wanted to just have everything happen at the cathedral. He said, well, you know, and this cathedral is in Upper Manhattan by Columbia University and right bordering the ghetto of some of the poorest parts of New York at that time. And he said, everything should happen in a cathedral. That's, you know, in a cathedral in France or England, that would be the center of everything. You'd have the farmer's market there. You'd have the traveling circus there. You'd have everybody. So he began to bring in everybody to the cathedral. Philip Petit walked the tightrope it's two blocks long, this church. And the largest Gothic cathedral, although, you know, a little more recent than other Gothic cathedrals, the largest in the world. So we became artists in residence there. And he said, when are you going to play on Sunday morning? We played an occasional concert. And well, I had never been to a mass, an Episcopal mass. I learned about it in music history class, and I knew the parts of a mass, a Sanctus and a Kyrie and so on and so on. So we wrote loosely a mass for the earth that's called the Missa Gaia Earth Mass, based on this book that James Lovelock had just recently come out when we made this piece of music. And Paul was fascinated by that. He bought copies and said, you got to read this book. Mr. Lovelock, a scientist, and Lynn Margulis, another scientist, their hypothesis, because they're scientists, a hypothesis is, their Gaia hypothesis is the earth is one living thing. It's one organism, and we are all a part of that one organism. That was a new idea in about 1980, in the early 80s. Now, I think we all pretty much accept that, and not long after that, Unitarian Universalists adopted our seventh principle of the interdependent web of all life. Kind of the same idea. And the semantics of all this can be debated by everybody. But when I think about where we came from and all, when we took our jangled mass of protoplasm and left the ocean and began to think we were separate, we had this model. Where did it come from? Well, it came from our mother Earth, who modeled for us a breathing system. You know, there were millions of years there where it rained on Earth all over, and the whole Earth was flooded. Before that, it was fire. And you know, this has been billions of years of evolution to come to this place we are at now. So let me get by all of that and say, now living things have this model that came from the earth evolving a circulatory system, the water cycle that carried the nutrients, carried away the waste, and dealt with it. Breathing system, the big green things that breathe out and we breathe in, and so on and so on. When the dinosaurs were around, there were not flowering plants until late in the time of the dinosaurs. Maybe the biggest revolution that has anything to do with us came this proliferation of flowering plants with seeds that were armored that could live through the winter. Before it was cones and moss and, you know, things like that. So these seeds, the armored seeds, brought about this incredible revolution on the earth to make an atmosphere dense in oxygen so that us large-brained, I use the term loosely, high-metabolism animals could exist on the earth. This is not a permanent thing at all. It happened really recently in the history of the earth, and it's not a given. So the breathing system, the circulatory system, the digestive system of the earth would be the soil, if you will. But I know things break down in the air and in the water and entropy. I know, but literally, I meant poetically, we say back to the earth. Things go back to the earth. All of the stuff, the systems we have, are Mother Earth modeled before we came along. The heart of the earth, if you will. Not just because I'm romantic about trees, but I am. The big trees and the forests and the jungles really just pull the water out of the earth, bring it back to the air with the earth turning and things warming and expanding, cooling and condensing and the earth turning and other things trying to stay still. The pump of the water cycle works for us. And so you could go on with the body parts. I won't put anything in New Jersey, you know, indict any particular place. Where's the spleen? And you know, we don't want to anthropomorphize and make it into a cute little being either, you know, with a brain in the Arctic. But there are people who think that amputation is a good way. We have people in the government who think we should have. We have these national sacrifice areas. Did you know that? That like down in the Four Corners area of the Southwest, the government's own environmentalists will say, it'll never come back if you do that, if you mine, if you do whatever. And I guess for the good of whatever, we have to cut off the whatever. We have to amputate this for the good of something else. For the good of what? What is this economy feeding? We can see what it's doing in this country right now, and in fact a lot of the world, is the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. It's a very simple thing that we could do something about, but we're a little bit too content right at the moment, because I think when I say we, meaning us, we're a little bit too privileged still to have felt this to the point where we're about to make a revolution. But if we look around, we don't have to look far to see the folks who know climate change is a real thing, who know that the economic system is not working, who know that the legality of this is denying the very humanity of our neighbors and our friends. So there's what we got to do. And before I leave you with depression, it's time for a little music. I know we're past noon already, but may I ask permission, or let's have a committee decision. There were two songs. Can I get those in, or should I just do one? Should I do one song? Okay. You can help with this. You'll just have to get me back. I have a lot more songs, and I'll be back. So people say, okay, we're all inspired. We're all upset by what you just said. What do we do now? We've got to reclaim our voice, is what we got to do. My wish for you, as now we part, is for greater peace to fill your heart with dreams as vast as starry space. So hurt and anger know no place. May truth be shared and wounds be healed, and joy for living be revealed. Through every fate and circumstance, may hope lead weary steps to dance. And may your life be as a song, resounding with the dawn, to sing awake the light, then softly serenade the stars, ever dancing circles in the night. We put this refrain in your order of service. This song is actually, the refrain of this song is also in our Singing the Journey book, but don't look it up right there now, because I do the melody a little bit differently, and more syncopated. If you do look it up, take the written music notes with a grain of salt. Let's try that again. I'll sing a line, you sing it back. And may your life be as a song. Sing that again. And may your life be as a song, resounding with the dawn, to sing awake the light. Sing that. Resounding with the dawn, to sing awake the light, then softly serenade the stars, then softly serenade the stars, ever dancing circles in the night, ever dancing circles in the night. So it turns out that this is a four-part round, ha ha ha, but I know we can do it in at least two parts, if you'll self-select, you know who you are, rather than this side or that side. If you can sing the second part, I'll show you where it starts. If you're unsure, stick with me. If you're more adventurous, creative, or lost, you can be part three or part four. And may your life be as a song, resound. And may your life be to sing awake the light, then softly serenade the stars, ever dancing circles in the night. May your life be as a song, resounding with the dawn, to sing awake the light, then softly serenade the stars, ever dancing circles in the night, ever dancing circles in the night. Dancing circles in the night. When Wisdom was a striking young man, he met a beautiful woman named Love. Now, I'm not really sure who was the man and who was the woman. Maybe they were the same sex. "I'd like to keep you," said Wisdom. "You can't own me," said Love, "but I love you anyway. What would it cost to know you'd always be there?" asked Wisdom. "Don't ask such questions," said Love. "Just look at the stars." "Why?" Wisdom pondered. "Are they telling us something?" "Oh, chill out," chided Love, which made Wisdom happy in a funny sort of way. And so it was that Wisdom fell in love with Love and thus became truly wise. Let's go in peace. Join us for coffee hour and analysis.
I think that Jim will have some CDs and songbooks there for sale if you're interested.
Yes, Jim will have his CD and songbook store opened up pretty soon out there. The nicest thing about that is it allows me to take a little of you home with me, which is good. So, thank you so much for having me. It's been a delight to be here for both concert and service.